Hello and welcome for the last time to Engineering Announcements from the IBA. Remember how it used to be?
Good morning. Time for another edition of the IBA's Engineering Announcements for the Radio and Television Trade.
Today, we look back at 20 years and almost 1,000 editions of these broadcasts and how they've evolved from humble beginnings.
Also today, a roundup of transmitter news to bring you up to date on aerial maintenance, NICAM stereo, community radio and new television relays.
But we start with reminiscences of 20 years of engineering announcements. And to help us, we've invited back two characters who are mainstays of the programme for so long. Pat Hawker and John Lovell. They're talking in the control room to Bruce Randall.
Well, gentlemen, it's marvellous to have you back here again, looking younger than ever, if I may say so. Pat, you were in this programme at the very beginning back in 1970. What was the motivation for getting a show like this on the air, and how did it all start?
Well, we didn't even call it a programme, because in fact it was really a series of announcements, and it started because of a terrible calamity we had on building up the relays for the colour programme. The whole of the relay program was based on a certain type of 200-watt transposer, which they were supposed to run four of these things in parallel to give us the higher power local relays. And too late, they discovered you couldn't run travelling wave tubes in parallel. So the whole program got slightly delayed while we went and bought some valve-type equipment. And to cover the fact that the dealers didn't know where they were, we introduced this idea of making announcements on a Monday morning when the network was together for a programme that was called Monday's Newcomers, an old advertising system.
It must have been very simply made in those days with very limited facilities, I should think.
Well, we didn't have any facilities, really. We borrowed a certain amount of equipment from the E&D department, which had a one slide scanner. Peter King made us a caption scanner, and we just used to do the recordings in audio, and then we would have to insert visuals alternately. It would be a caption and then a photograph on the slide. And of course, we didn't have any facilities for making captions, so we just stuck bits of magnetic letters onto steel plates and so on, coloured them up with a Cox box, as it was called.
Well, by the time I came along in 1980 or so, John, it was all in full swing with you marshalling 10 or 12 people to put the whole thing together.
That's right. We had pre-recorded the sounds in the morning, and then in the afternoon it was a question of getting the team up here, at least one person for each piece of equipment, two caption scanners to deal with, plus a slide scanner, occasionally a camera and the captions that went in front of that. And of course the problem with that situation is that if one person makes a mistake, we have to stop and start again. It was a bit fingernail biting, especially near the end of the afternoon when we still hadn't got it all on tape.
I can well imagine. You were the voice of the IBA for many years. We didn't often see you in vision. Why was that not done? Many people say, why don't we see the presenters every week?
Well, we were aiming at a factual programme for the trade to give them information. It was not a personality thing at all. Time was of the other essence, and of course facilities. If you have a camera crew on the presenters, it's going to take much longer. None of us was trained to appear on television. It was quite sufficient just to get people with reasonable voices to pass the information on.
Although we do have a few clips from early days when we did try it once or twice, including you, I think. Just watch this for a second.
If you're a regular viewer, then you'll know that the IBA has been working on a new system to give you one step more than the realism you get from stereo. It's called surround sound, and it's a system to allow you to hear not only sounds from in front of you, as in stereo, but from all around.
Capital Radio are to make the first three-channel surround sound broadcasts in the London area. the IBA's plans are revealed for the engineering side of the fourth channel. Colour set deliveries are down, black and white sets are up, the latest delivery figures from Bremer. And a new leaflet available, all about our electronically generated test pattern, which we're already using in some ITV areas. Good morning, thanks for joining us. If you'd like a copy of that leaflet, make sure you've a pen and paper to hand in a few minutes' time, when we'll be giving you the address to write to.
Transmitter news now, and this week we have four stations to detail. In Yorkshire, the Armitage Bridge Relay in the Holme Valley entered programme service last Friday.
Pat, anyone who works in broadcasting has got a whole catalogue of hair-raising stories of things that went wrong or almost went wrong. What do you remember back from those early days?
Well, we used to do it all, of course, in Brompton Road in London. And one day when we were, Peter Ashforth and myself, who were making the sound recording for what we used to call dealer mail, which was the first time we introduced the idea of unscripted interviews onto the programme. We were suddenly interrupted by the tea lady coming in and plonking down. So that slightly threw us off balance, but we were able to continue.
John, what about you?
Well, I think this is connected with Pat's story, because on one fabulous day at Brompton Road, by that time we had one graphic artist, but he was late in that morning. And all the captions we required were carefully locked away in his office, which was on the sixth floor. We were making the programme in the basement. So there was a procession of people, none of whom could be spared, going up and down in the lifts, trying to break into his office. The story had a happy ending. He did turn up 2 minutes before the programme went on air, and the captions arrived in time, just. But it makes the adrenaline flow.
I remember one dreadful time for me when I was interviewing a chap in the British Telecom Tower about how the system works there, a lovely chap. But he gave me one-word answers, the interviewer's nightmare.
Just how many different circuits does the control room have to deal with?
Between 200 and 250.
As many as that?
Yes.
And presumably you've got BBC and IBA circuits to worry about, and other users too.
Many other users, yes.
But presumably the ITV network keeps you busy most.
That's the one that does all the switching.
And does all the changing every half hour or so.
Sometimes, yes.
And so how do you cope with that? Do you have a big panel over there which looks as though it might do the trick?
Yeah, that's the switching machine.
And you program that with the changes at various times?
Yes, all day, all evening.
Another horror story I remember is when we were sitting here one morning playing out the program one Tuesday, and we actually discovered soon after the opening music that it was the previous week's program we were showing again. And Wayne Kilby was the engineer, who's done lots of things on this programme, but he was the engineer that morning, and fortunately he had the right programme on the backup machine, and he very cleverly cross-faded and hardly anyone noticed. But Wayne himself, of course, had directed and appeared in the programme himself years earlier.
You did press the record button, did you? Oh.
What's the record button?
What are these little damp patches where I laid my hands?
And memories of you, Pat, I seem to have to stand on a box when I'm interviewing you, because you're so tall. And I remember one occasion on Brighton Beach, one international broadcasting convention, we were doing something on the beach, and there I was standing on this box, and an audience gathering on the foreshore having a tremendous laugh at my expense.
Yes, and I seem to be leaning over as though protecting myself from the wind, and I suspect it was partly to try and come down to your level, but... yes, it was that one. But of course, in the beginning, we scripted all our announcements, and it wasn't until Peter Ashforth arrived on the scene that we actually ventured into doing unscripted interviews, and they were genuinely unscripted interviews. And Peter, after he left engineering information and went into the programme side, was quite prepared to be fairly critical of the engineering and make quite sure that we did explain what was going on.
But let's take one of these. I mean, the home terminal, for example. Nobody could surely argue that this is not a brilliant idea and is going to be extremely useful. Why all this soul-searching about whether it's really going to be worth it and so on and so forth?
Well, how many of us in our homes want to have a computer available, or how many of us would, in fact, look upon a home as a refuge from automation?
And I think those it enabled lots of topics to be introduced in an informal way, and I think that allowed us really to move on and develop it when the technology allowed us to introduce this kind of thing in vision. And then we went in, mm-hmm. to do more elaborate features.
Yes, but when you got a budget to actually be able to borrow a camera and do pieces, this made a big change.
The mast is rotated to maximise an intended incoming signal feed, and measurements made of field strength of vision and sound carriers on all channels available from the parent station.
The electronics are housed in a secure waterproof cabinet with good access for the maintenance contractor. On top, the equalizers and main amplifier, and down below, the block converter to change the channels and power supply converters to produce 240 volts from the 55 volts AC fed up from the nearest house. Of course, anyone within range of the transmitter can benefit from the signals, whether they've contributed to the cost or not, so it's important to canvass local opinion at an early stage. Spare a thought for those whose job it is to climb the mast and work in very awkward and uncomfortable conditions. It's time-consuming work. Even changing a mast light takes quite a time. Many of the masts are 900 or 1,000 feet high, and you need a very good head indeed for heights. Standing on top of the aerial cylinder is definitely not recommended for the faint-hearted.
Ακούτε τον ελληνικό-κυπριακό ραδιοφωνικό σταθμό του Λονδίνου στη συχνότητα 103,3 FM. Φίλοι μου, τραγουδάει για σας ο Γιάννης Πάριος «Να το πάρει στο κορίτσι». Η μουσική είναι του Ζάκ Ιακωβίδη και η στίχη του Κώστα Νικολαίδη. Απολαύστε το!
A comprehensive range of alarm indications are built into the monitoring system to alert the operators who can remotely control the uplink equipment by overriding the automatic commands of the station controller. The off-air sound and picture quality is also monitored at Croydon, using similar receiving equipment to that available to the average domestic viewer.
Well, we've all had a wonderful time doing it, but as we say, all things have got to come to an end, and the show must go on at least for another few minutes. So we'll hand back to Janet Salkeld in the studio for the special announcements.
And thank you very much, Bruce. And the first of the last special announcements is for Winter Hill in Lancashire, which continues on reduced power during a major aerial overhaul.
In Suffolk, Anglia ITV and Channel 4 from Sudbury are liable to be off the air between 5 and 11am any day up to the 16th of August and on continuous reduced power throughout this period. This is for replacement work on the aerial system.
The Beacon Hill transmitter near Torquay is continuing on reduced power into August on all four channels during major aerial work.
A very quick roundup of other transmitter news. For incremental radio, tests have started on 102.6 MHz from Allsley Park for Radio Harmony in Coventry. Programmes, mainly for ethnic groups, are due at the end of August. NICAM stereo for television is now spreading rapidly. In addition to the six main stations already in service, another five are due very soon. Belmont, Carrington Hill, Divis, Rowridge and Sandy Heath. There should be a further six stations with NICAM by the end of the year.
Television relays and on Tayside, Kinross, delayed a little, is now due later this week. Group CD aerials for this one, vertically polarised. In Devon, Great Torrington is also delayed and it's now expected towards the end of next week. Group B aerials, again vertically polarised. Engineering information will of course continue for the time being on Teletext.
We can't go without just mentioning Paul Gardiner, who for 10 years wrote and produced so many of the more in-depth technical features in these broadcasts and generally kept things afloat during the 1980s. We know from the many letters you've sent recently just how much the programmes have been appreciated. Thanks for all your good wishes.
Well, all we can say now is thank you for being such a loyal audience, and as a reward, next week at this time, there'll be a special programme looking forward to the transition of IBA Engineering into a commercial transmission company. So remember to set your VCRs for one more week. But from all those who have worked on engineering announcements over 20 years, thank you for watching and goodbye.
All right, now... Here we go. Well,
plenty.
Like I said.